Artlist.io. Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We deal with the pressure. It's not how much pressure you have, it's how you handle it. It's your boy C-Rock here in That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show with your boy C-Rock. I got another great guest for you today. Alessandro Boglieri is in the building. He's the founder of Influencer Marketing Factory. He's up in New York City, as you see. If you guys are watching, you can see the background. He's been featured on Forbes, BBC, Wall Street Journal, Adweek, you name it. He's got a great Instagram account, a great following there. Check him out at A-L-E-X, Alex, E-I-D-O-S. Go check him out there. Man, I'm looking forward to finding out more about you, man. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Now, do you go by Alex, right?
Alessandro, but Alex sounds good to me, yes.
All right, cool, Alex. Well, let's find out what you're made of today, man. What are you made of, Alex?
You know, a combination of different things, being an immigrant in the States that, you know, came here with, typical story, like, you know, no money, no connection type of thing. Absolutely, I would say determination was a big thing. Proactivity, right? Nothing that gives you anything in life. So you had to be proactive in life. And then when it comes to work for myself and the team that works with me, a dynamic and a non-traditional approach to work. So, you know, having that, you have to be like, you know, you want to be professional, but at the same time, having fun and all the time, becoming the better version of yourself when it comes to, you know, personal level and professional speaking.
Love it, man. So you big on having fun while you work, right?
Yeah, that's especially like, you know, in influencer marketing, it's fun, you know, it's something, you know, cool to do and work on. So imagine like, you know, not having fun when you work on social media, like, come on, it's the first thing you should have, it's having fun, you know?
Yeah. So I've had a lot of conversations about this recently on my show and in my household, because my son's getting ready to turn, he's a senior, he's going to be 18 soon. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about this, about going to college. Yeah. And or what's he going to do? And a lot of people come to me like, oh, your son's a senior. What is he going to do? Is he going to go to, you know, where's he going to college? And I told my son, like, dude, you don't need to feel any stress or pressure. Mm-hmm. All you need to know is we're going to find out what you love to do and passionate about it and have fun doing it and figure out a way to make money doing it. How's that sound? He's like, yeah, I love it. All right, let's do it. You know? So tell me, where did you come from, Alex, first of all?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, originally I'm from Italy, from Milano. I moved in different cities before arriving in New York City. So I lived in Milano, you know, majority of my life. After that, I went to Copenhagen, Denmark, to get my master's degree. And then after that, I moved to Miami for a couple of years. And then after that, New York City. So I changed a lot based on the weather, I would say, you know, so very cold, very warm and hot and humid, and then cold again, I would say. So that is like, you know, geographically, in terms of that. In terms of like, you know, the story, it goes that I've been always, you know, in love with basically the digital world, internet, you know, computers, since I was like maybe 6 years old. I started playing with computers at that age. I was lucky enough to have one in my house at the time. So I was fascinated by that. You know, when I, you know, that middle school, you know, HTML, CSS, these type of things, right? Yep. And so basically I was like, wow, you can go like, you know, from your computer in your home to, you know, the internet, you know, and reaching people. And then after that, you know, I got into graphic design and, you know, things like that. And after a while I was like, okay, graphic design is cool, but what about marketing? So, you know, I was lucky enough to have a really good professor during, you know, my bachelor's degree, and I fall in love with that. And after that, you know, I basically created my first startup when I was 18 years old, 18, 19, you know, more or less. I had a team of people with me of around like, you know, 20 people. We didn't make a single dime. So I didn't make a single euro at the time because I was in Milano doing that. But I learned so much in terms of leadership, managing team, PR, shaking hands and meeting people, networking. So I got so much more. So again, didn't make a single dollar, but that helped me out to basically understanding what does it mean to create a company. And then when I moved to the States, I was able to get all that together. So years of experience of really unpaid, I would say, you know, labor for myself. But it taught me, again, you know, determination, productivity, everything that I told you before. And so now here we are with the Influencer Marketing Factory, you know, 45 people in the team between the US and Europe, totally bootstrapped, growing quite fastly in the past 5 years.
So when did you start making money? 5 years ago?
So in terms of company, the first company is making real money, yes, 5 years ago. Now I'm 32, so yeah, I was like, you know, 27.
But before I go into that, I want to go into that. I got a question for you because, you know, I'm Italian. I'm American-Italian. I was born here. My grandfather was born in Italy. But I have a friend that owns a restaurant here, and he's born in Italy, but he comes here. He still has a great, you know, thick accent. He loves talking to the ladies when they come into the restaurant. He gives them a kiss on the cheek and he's, oh, look at you. He doesn't care if they're married or anything. Are all Italian guys from Italy good at talking to ladies?
I would say that we are very welcoming and very, you know, passionate about everything, to be honest. It's not just, to be honest, like jokes apart, we are very welcoming. The double, you know, kiss, for instance, it's something that I know in the US people are like, you know, at the beginning is like, what is that? Like, you know, you don't do this. While in Italy, we do it. Overall, I would say that we are very, like, you know, open to meeting new people. We're very welcoming and we make friends very easily. So ladies, no ladies, like we're there to talk with people and we love that. Like sometimes I have to switch off and be like, okay, let me stop for a second because we can talk, you know, like, you know, without any pause, anything like that. So yeah, whatever it happens to us, we talk, we welcome you and we're nice people usually.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love it. I make a joke, obviously, but yeah, it's true. Though. He's like, He's great, this guy. His name's Fausto. So how did you get into influencer marketing? Like, what was the thing? First, but actually, before you do that, what does your company do? Influencer marketing, you specifically, what do you do?
Long story short, we basically help brands from Fortune 500 companies to, you know, small business, small medium businesses to activate all their influencer marketing campaigns. So from identify the right influencers, you know, storytelling and creativity, legal and agreements, shipping and logistics, management of the campaign, ROI analysis, paid media amplification. So basically you want to do something with influencers instead of like, you know, trying yourself, wasting money and time, you come to us with a budget, a timeline, a certain KPIs and goals in mind, and we do everything for you. So that is our bread and butter. We don't do a thousand different things. We do influencer marketing. We do one thing. We do it very well. That's what we offer to brands of any different type of sites.
And how did you decide to do that?
Basically, now 7/8 years ago, maybe 8 years ago or plus, something like that, when I was in Copenhagen, Denmark, I was doing my master's degree, right? So the good thing of Europe and specifically Scandinavia, they give you, you can go, if you are from the European Union, you can go there and basically they get a degree for free. So I didn't pay a single dime to get my master's degree. And basically you go there, you attend class, of course you have to pay for your own things, but I was like, you know, fascinated by the idea that like, okay, I can get education totally for free. Mm-hmm. And, so I moved there, first time that I went outside from Italy, my English was like very basic. Like it was not even broken English. It was non-existent English, right?
Yeah.
First week, my head was spinning all the time. I was translating from Italian all the time to English. So it was very difficult for me. And it was definitely challenging because in Italy, back in the day, we were not studying English that much. Now it's a bit better. But so what happened is that I was there and was doing my master's degree and I was working as a growth hacker or growth marketer. Mm-hmm. You know, so basically a growth marketer is someone that helps companies with out of the box, you know, creative ideas to grow your company. And I was specifically working in the SaaS business to business industry, right? So very specific, but I had so much fun because I was all the time thinking, how can I do things in a different way with lower budgets, right? Than maybe other bigger companies. And that's what, you know, make your head and mind all the time, you know, changing, you know, like, you know, gears all the time. Like, how can I grow this company, right? And so I was doing it for others. And while I was working as a growth marketer, I was working with this other guy and we were looking for something else. Like, what is next? What is next, right? And the next thing, you know, was influencer marketing. So I basically, I killed two birds with one stone because I had also to write my thesis at the time. So I was like, I'm already working on this new thing called influencer marketing, right? But I also had to write a thesis. Since I was never a big fan of academia, right? I find it always very boring, very vanilla. It doesn't really give you anything in the real world when it comes to digital marketing. Of course, you want to become a surgeon, you have to study.
Yeah.
You're a lawyer, you know. But marketing, you can basically learn anything by yourself on YouTube. So and doing, right? So I was like, okay, I have to write a thesis. I hate doing that. Let me do it on something where I have like real data. And so at the time, I basically wrote my thesis and I was the first one, I think, in the world to create this thing called Instagram Money Calculator. Basically, it was a simple algorithm, you know, written in Node.js, was scraping a lot of data, and you were putting like any influencer, any content creator, anyone, even your friends, you know, on Instagram, you put the username there and you click a button and it was telling you the number of followers, the engagement rate, how much they should be paid for a promoted post based on some calculation that I did myself. And that was the real, I would say, tool online that was taking data and instead of be like, oh yeah, you should be paid, you know, this amount. It was actually, you know, like based on data, right? So it was like, it's not any more pretty faces on Instagram. Actually, now there is data inside.
So, numbers.
We just like, I had to write a thesis. I was already working in the influencer marketing arena. And I was like, let's combine them together. I then wrote this thing. It became quite a successful tool online. And I was like, starting this match about the industry was like, wow, this is really the next big thing. And that was a good bet because now we're seeing that it's growing like crazy.
Now, did that tool get used? And were you able to make any money from that tool?
Not money, because I was basically renting to this other website I was working with, you know, called Influencer Marketing Hub. Influencer Marketing Hub, very famous, you know, like in the industry, it's basically number one. So I was not able to make money, but it helped me a lot when I was applying for my O-1 visa. That is basically the visa for extraordinary abilities to enter the US. In addition to many other things, I was also able to show that this tool was used not only by users, but also by, you know, people like, you know, journalists, reporters to calculate things. It was used by third party, you know, companies and so on. So it was not just that, but in addition, there was a really nice addition to my case in terms of like, I made a big impact in the industry because I was the first one creating something like that.
And then does this still work now, that tool?
It does, but it doesn't take my original algorithm in place. So now it's way easier. And, you know, I would say, just look at other numbers because I stopped working on that, you know, a long time ago, but it still works. And after that, we did also the YouTube one and the TikTok, if I'm correct. So it was working well. And basically now you can just use different sliders and calculate things. It's not under my IP, unfortunately, but it was a really good experiment to see again, like, can you do something for free? And what is the return? And the return was a lot of backlinks, a lot of mentions on website, the reporters asking about the tool and so on. So it was a really nice way to understand that sometimes to make money, it takes much more time, right? You have to start building something for free, giving away for free, and then things will come later.
Yep. And how has influencer marketing changed since you started till now? Is it something that changes like very fast? With Instagram and TikTok and all this, like, how do you see through the BS where there's people that really don't back up their followers? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good question. So first of all, when you say about, you know, followers, first of all, we luckily moved away from the number of followers that you have to a more complex analysis. Not even anymore just engagement rate. They basically is a ratio, right? What is the engagement divided by the number of followers, then multiplied by 100, right? That number can be also faked, can be inflated quite easily. So now, we as an agency using third-party platforms, so we're able to really look into the data. So, you know, historical data, how did they perform for, like, you know, previous campaigns on similar industries and verticals? What is the type of demographic that they have? You know, before, people were only looking at number of followers and where they were based. Oh, this person has 1 million followers in New York. Fantastic. Now, instead, you want to see where is the demographic from? You know, are they right range of age? It is like, you know, so you want to go more much in detail. So I would say that now it's more serious, you know, in a way. Before it was like, yeah, this thing, you know, with this bunch of kids, let's give them some money, let's see. Now there is a protocol, there is a process in place. And so influencer marketing is just as, again, serious and in-depth as any other marketing channel that you could use these days.
And then how does it work? Do the influencers come to you and then the businesses come to you too? Or do you chase both of those?
So we do both. Primarily, I would say 90% of our business come from brands that needs our services. And then in addition to that, also we have a talent representation agency. Basically, we do both. But I would say that our core is still brands coming to us and be like, you know, hey, we do have, let's make an simple example. A new beauty, you know, beauty brand that comes out with a new beauty item and they want to make it, let's call it viral on TikTok, whatever, on a specific geographic, on a specific demographics. They come to us and we do everything. We identify the right influencers. We think about the storytelling behind that, the creative side. We take care of negotiation of pricing, you know. So basically, again, you know, as mentioned before, they come to us, they give us the goals that they have in mind, the KPIs, the budgets, and we do everything on their behalf.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. And then how's it changing now with that part, like as far as how much they're willing to pay for that stuff now?
So now pricing is going up. Like, what is crazy is that we have been one of the first agencies in the world offering TikTok when it was out. So I remember that I was a big fan of Vine. Vine was discontinued. After Vine, we got Musical.ly. I opened Musical.ly And it was like, this is not for me because it's a bunch of like, you know, kids dancing and that, I'm definitely not in the right demographics. So I uninstalled it. But then I was like, I saw the news and everything was like becoming TikTok. I got into that and I was like, okay, this is interesting. And the first campaigns that we did at the time, we were paying like $100 to get like in front of millions of people. It was that cheap. It was the cheapest thing I've ever seen in my life. Now, the same people are asking you maybe $15,000, you know? So the thing is that now it's crazy. Unfortunately, and to go back to your question, how do you look into like BS? That's our job. Like, we can see if an influencer is actually valued that much or not, right?
Yep, yep.
A lot of them, they will just try to ask you for $20,000 for nothing. Maybe their real price is $2,000. If you don't have the knowledge, if you have not been in the industry like us for a long time, you might not know and be like, okay, I trust you, you know? So it based also on, you know, like your own knowledge, historical data, and so on. But yeah, it changed a lot. Before it was like this thing, like, yeah, let me do it as a side job.
Yeah.
Now some of these people, they make 6 digits, 7 digits a year. It's a real job. And marketers and brands are finally understanding that.
Yeah, yeah. And this is all organic too. When you sign on with one of them, you pay the influencer. It's organic. They don't put ad money behind it, right?
They don't. But lately, a lot of our clients, I would say on TikTok, almost 90% of our clients, they ask them to boost through paid media. For two reasons, primarily. One, there is more competition now, so it's more difficult to get in the millions of views as it was, let's say, 2 years ago. And secondly, whenever you have organic content, it's very difficult to have a link, right? You have to add a link in the bio, but it's multiple, like, you know, touch points.
That's right. Instead, yeah.
With paid media, you can add a button that says, like, learn more, purchase now, whatever. Yep. So you also have that. So I would say that the best, I would say now, is organic content. Out of the, let's say, 10 content that perform the best, take two of them and then boost the two that works the best.
Yeah, yeah, because then you're removing the friction, you know, the extra steps, like you're saying. Yeah, I love it. All right, cool. So now I want to ask you some questions about when you were moving around. So when you went from Italy to Copenhagen and then you went to Miami and New York, like, tell me about the different lifestyle. And then the, like, I assume like you're in the dating scene. Are you married? I don't know where you are with that. Family, where are you with that?
Married.
Yes. Okay, you're married. So I can't get you into some of those old stories of the women and stuff like that, I'm sure. But like, what was the lifestyle like in the different places? And what was your favorite place?
So I learned a lot from each of them, I would say. Italy, you know, again, I'm from there, raised and born in Milano. So very active city, you know, full of, it's the capital of fashion, you know, in Italy. It's the place where everyone goes to study. There are the best colleges. There are, you know, the best type of like work offers. So, you know, apart from Milano, that is a bit different from all the other cities in Italy, I would say. Overall, still is still in Italy. And what I miss of that is the, I would say, the comfort of life. Even if it is like, you know, fast-paced in Milano. I mean, nothing compared to New York after New York.
Yeah,
Milano, it's like, it's a little town, to be honest. I would say that I miss sometimes that people also enjoy life. And after a while, it's not just about work. And it's also like, you know, nurturing like a relationship with your family, with your friends, with your partner, right? So I would say that it's definitely a better balance between what you have to do for work and enjoy life. So that is what I miss. Copenhagen, what I learn about a bit more about, you know, a society that works well on, you know, you don't have to pay for education, for instance. The government is there to help you out and everything. I like it and I don't like it at the same time. I like it because for certain people, maybe they cannot achieve certain things by themselves because of anything, you know, like family has not enough money for something, whatever, or you were born without like, you know, maybe like, you know, a leg or something. Of course, certain people that needs and you have to get help. But at the same time, I didn't like it because it removes competition. It removes that sense of I want to create something. And so I noticed that too many people were like chilling there. And, you know, you don't really create anything and you start making a family really, really young. Nothing against that. But if you're an entrepreneur like myself, that is not the place to be. In my
opinion. Yeah.
So that's what I learned. Like, really good if you want to have a family and have a very easy, simple life. Scandinavia is fantastic. But also the weather, it's definitely like, you know, it's cold and it's like, you know, very dark all year long. It's very difficult to you. Then I moved to Miami. Miami was the opposite of Copenhagen. So
yeah, tell me about your thoughts in Miami when you first got there.
Well, when I first got there, I loved it, man. I loved it because it was so different from anything else. First of all, I was like living in the States, big, huge difference because I visited the States before as a kid, as a teenager, multiple times. But somebody needs to visit for 10 days and somebody needs to live there. So, you know, I got fascinated by like, you know, go to even just like the supermarket, right? It was like everything is bigger, right? And everyone has bigger cars and everything is just like huge, like, you know, bigger street, big, everything is just more. And when I moved there, I would say that I started understanding the American mindset when it comes to work. And especially, not apart from like, you know, work ethics, whatever, it is about the scale of business that you can achieve. When you are in Europe, and especially in Milano, fortunately, in Italy, you know, Italy, we say it's a country for all people, and it's true. It's very difficult for entrepreneurs, especially young people, to make not even a living. A success is impossible, making a living also. And so when I came to the States, I was fascinated by the idea of the American dream that I really believe it still actually like exists. And if you want to achieve something and really put everything into that, you can do it. They didn't care about my accent. They didn't care where I was from. They didn't care I was young. They only care about what type of like, you know, results you can bring me. And so, again, I put a lot of efforts into this, but I was fascinated by that. So I would say that that's what I learned. Miami was really cool at the beginning. After a while, in my opinion, it was a bit, at least for me, it was a bit boring because I'm more of a New York City person. I want to go to things and events and, you know, there is much more offering compared to that. But the first year and a half in Miami was paradise. It was like always warm and I was able to do paddle boarding on a Wednesday. Like, you know,
Yeah. And then you go to New York and then that's more like your scene because you like, what kind of events you like to go to?
Any type of events. I'm talking like, you know, from cultural things to networking events to, I love stand-up comedy. And for
instance, me too.
Like in Miami, there is no stand-up comedy scene. While in New York, if you go to Comedy Cellar or all the other places, it's basically where the majority of stand-up comedians are born and raised, right? So I miss that. I miss the offering. I was missing even the type of people that you can find. In New York, you can find people from any cultural background, any places in the world, and I love meeting people because I can learn so much. While Miami, I would say, at least at the time, you know, 5-6 years ago, it was a bit more different than after with all the crypto things, it changed a bit and everything. But I was, I needed more, and at the end of the day, I'm a city person, so I love to be around. Yeah. Skyscrapers.
When you go to the comedy, the stand-up comedy, is there some jokes lost in translation because it's your second language?
When I arrived, yes, absolutely. But not for the lost in translation in terms of terminology, but about the culture. Yeah. And after being living here for 5-6 years now, I would say that the majority, I get them. Sometimes like, you know, maybe they do a joke about like Ohio and yeah, of course I don't get it. You know,
They
make a joke about like, you know, living here. And then, I visited 28 states so far in the US.
Okay.
So I have a good feeling of like different places. So I know more or less if they refer to something, I get it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, it's super specific about, let's say, a TV show that was going here in the 90s. I was a kid in Italy. So many times I don't get that type of references, but I have like a bit more modern and real-time type of reference, I get them, yes.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha. And do you have a podcast?
Yes, I do. Yeah, yeah.
Tell us about the podcast.
Yeah, it's called The Influence Factor. You know, it's a top 1% podcast. We invite people that are somehow involved in influencer marketing, the creator economy, social commerce, and so on. We had really great people from companies such as, you know, TikTok, Shopify, Reddit, you know, Amazon, and many others. And basically, we talk for like, you know, 30, 40 minutes about, you know, the guest, what is happening in the industry, any do's and don'ts, best tricks and tips for marketers that want to be updated and be in the loop of the latest trends.
And then how does podcasting changed for like your life or business? Like, so I asked this question because it's changed my life and business, right? From when I started till now. Like, how's that changed? And by the way, I assume you go on shows too, not just this one. Do you go on shows consistently on other people's?
Yeah, I want to do more of that this year. I mean, the upcoming year for sure. It's something that I love doing. So yeah, but whenever I get called for something, I usually go, yes.
Yeah, so having your show and podcasting, what has it done for you and your business?
I would say more let me say this. Usually it's difficult to sell, right? When you sell directly to someone. While instead you get introduced by someone else or you introduce your company through something that is soft selling, like a podcast, is way easier. I was not able, to be honest, to maybe get in touch with certain people or companies. It was not thanks to the podcast. So even if they were not necessarily becoming then clients, those people then, you know, like these great guests, they published maybe the clip that we do, right? We do a couple of 2-3 clips, vertical clips that they posted on LinkedIn. And maybe someone else from their audience saw it. And then there is a link that goes to the contact form, you know? So it's all indirect, I would say, number one. And two, being recognized in the industry. We sponsored this year VidCon. And to me, it was a bit crazy. I felt like...
Wait, what was it?
VidCon is like the biggest event for content creators. Okay. That happens in Anaheim, California, every year in June. And some people stopped me to be like, hey, I listened to the podcast episode. Da, da, da. And to me, it was the first time that was stopped by some people. And it was very nice, of course, but at the same time, quite crazy because I never felt, you know, like, okay, I go to, from like, you know, my room where I do this, you know, to actually be stopped around. So I would say that in terms of being recognized, becoming a name in the industry even more and getting in touch with certain type of companies, absolutely one of the best medium, I would say.
It is so powerful. It's amazing. It I mean, you know, to have somebody as a guest on the show, I might not have a call with. Now I can get a call with pretty much anybody now because of the show. But prior, like I could get people on a show, spend 30, 60 minutes with me. And I wouldn't be able to have a call with them. Now I'm asking them, picking their brain. It's just amazing. And the notoriety, like you said, the credibility and authority, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. So I love it. All right. Final question as we wind down here, Alex. I really appreciate you being here, man. You're a cool dude. I love Italians, you know, my people. Where do you go from here? Like, what's the vision? Like, what do you, because in all businesses, eventually things start to, they evolve, right? So where do you go from here? What's the vision?
So it's continue doing influencer marketing, knowing that things are changing. So I really want to expand the business in terms of, so the offering being more or less the same, but I really step up the game when it comes to the specific of the offering. Nowadays, companies, understandably, they want more. So it's like, instead of going, you know, horizontally, instead of offering a bunch of different things, I want to continue offering what we do, but, you know, vertically speaking, just adding more into that. And really, like, you know, level up when it comes to their requests from, like, you know, the needs of clients and so on. So continue with that, expanding the team and looking also potentially for other geographical places, like, you know, in terms of new markets. I've been looking a lot what is happening in China, Indonesia, other markets like that. So US, it's our core, but it's like, let's learn from others and let's also potentially become that bridge between countries that are outside the US that want to enter the US.
What? So wow. How do you do that in China, though? Like one, you don't speak Chinese, right?
Yeah, not yet. Like, I want to start learning Mandarin soon.
Let's go, man. So, but like, how do you do that? How do you tap into China? Like you decide, I decided I'm going to go to China. I'm going to learn as much as I can about theirs. Where do you start with that?
And that's something that I want to start work on. So I don't have like an answer yet, but the idea would be absolutely someone that maybe is in the US that speaks, you know, Mandarin. And maybe later on Cantonese also to open up to, you know, more areas. But the idea would be like, you know, let's have someone that is a bridge for us. And basically, instead of us going there, right, is like talking with someone that is based, let's say, out of China, based out of Indonesia. We already have like clients from Korea and Japan, for instance, right? And also some Chinese clients. And basically, they want to enter the US. But the thing is that they, as you correctly said, there is a barrier, like language barrier, right?
Yeah.
But many times, in addition to that, there is a cultural barrier, right, and differences in certain areas, right? You know, in China, they're even faster than the US. They want things even faster, right? So you need to have someone that is a sort of like, you know, bridge between the two cultures and understanding each other. So the first one is like having someone that speaks both languages, and potentially if they're like, you know, Asian American, for instance, even better, because they can understand both point of views, right? And having that type of bridge. And the good thing I would say that is that once you start having certain clients from different countries that are so different from the US or from Europe, but once you trust you, you know, it's golden because they don't have to go and look all the time for different point of contacts. They have you, they trust you, and it's a win-win for everyone. We get the money, they get the business, they get more sales, they get a new market open up. So it's...
Yeah, so it's hard to get, but then they're easier to keep.
I would say it takes a lot of time for the trust to kick in because, again, there are so many differences in terms of culture, how you approach work and so on. But certain cultures, when they trust you, then it's, I don't want to say for life, but certainly for years.
Yeah. Yeah. If you do your job, right? Yeah. All right. I'm going to send you off with this. What's your favorite kind of food?
I mean, I'm Italian. So, of course, you know, I'm gonna go with either any type of, I love amatriciana. Amatriciana pasta, you know, many people don't know about that one. People say carbonara, cacio e pepe, something. Yeah. But amatriciana pasta, I'm a sucker for it.
And what is that? Describe that. What is that?
It's basically you use the same long pasta. So, you know, bucatini, it's a good one. It's bucatini is like a sort of like, you know, big spaghetti, let's call it like that, yep, with a hole inside. So the sauce goes into that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bucatini, and bucatini means with a hole. That is the question.
Okay.
And then you do the tomato sauce, and in the tomato sauce, you put the guanciale. The guanciale is the cheek of the pig. They're usually using carbonara. So you can also use pancetta if you don't find it in the States, of course, but, you know, it's better. And basically it's like that. And then you put pecorino on top of everything.
Oh, you're making me hungry.
And it's so simple to make it, as majority of Italian, like in Italian dishes. But believe me, if you have it, especially in Rome, where it's from, it will change forever how you see food. It's so simple, but so good.
I'm hungry, man. Alex, I'm hungry, brother. Hey, guys, listen, thank you so much for being here, Alex. Thank you guys for all listening and or watching, however you're consuming this content. This is my guy, Alessandro Baglieri. He's from Italy, and he's the CEO of Influencer Marketing Factory. Guys, listen, I appreciate you guys watching, listening. Keep coming. Subscribe, like, let your friends know about us, as you know. We'll keep bringing you great guests. It's your boy, C-Rock, signing off from That One Studio and the What Are You Made Of Show. Until next time. Alex, hang tight. Until next time, be that one.
Okay. Peace.
Every single day I feel it. Artlist.io.